is I think when it comes to money, I think people are convinced that these rich people have peace. Mm-hmm. And no. They don't. That's the thing, is it's not dependent on the amount you have or what you've been given. Peace ultimately comes from this, I'm stewarding it the way God has told me to, right? And when I live in obedience to God, guess what he gives me? Peace.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of his spirit, do better. So together, we can be a little better. Welcome back to the A Little Better podcast. It is great that you're with us. And now, as soon as anyone mentions the word money, we all have like these different like implicit reactions. Some of us like tense up. Some of us are like driven, just, I want to make more of it. Some are just like, yep, I want it so I can spend it. Some is like, I just want to save and hold on to it. And some people are just like indifferent. But in reality, whether we like it or not, it's money that it doesn't necessarily make the world go round, but we do need it to keep the lights on. We do need it to keep the house warm, have food in the table, to be able to put gas in the tank, or petrol, as we say in Scotland. And we need these resources to kind of function in our day-to-day life. And for most Americans, money is a real struggle. For one of the richest nations in the world, it's kind of mind-boggling that that is the case. But we started this series called Money Matters this week, not because God cares necessarily about money, but he cares about how we care about money. And so that is what we are talking in the podcast today. And so I'd love to know, as we kick off, from you guys, I'm joined with Drew, who preached the message, and Matt. Matt Soans, and I'd love to know from you guys, like, how was money for you guys growing up? Like, what was that like? Was it a point of stress? Was it contention? Was it like, I just didn't really know? Like, what was that like for you guys?
I never had to think about money when I was growing up. I think my family was probably in that like 12% of people who are like, okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not in debt, planning for retirement. My parents were really frugal and they were really intentional about teaching me how to manage money. So I remember like going on vacation and they would say, hey, here's our budget for the day. You're in charge of what we eat and what our activities for the day. And so that was like, just like, they were really like, I had an amazing experience growing up, and I think that's really unusual. And it set me up for, to think well about money and stewardship with the...
Yeah, I would say my experience was similar. My dad owned his own company with his brothers. He was successful. So like growing up, I never worried about money. Mom and dad always seemed to take care of it. I would say we were in that 12% as well. And my dad also was very intentional of teaching us how to handle money, how to give back to God. So like we would always like... probably once every 2 weeks, we would sit down at a table, and my dad would like run scenarios. He'd be like, hey, this is how much you made. What are you doing with it? And how are you going to budget it and stuff? And so like money was a regular conversation in our family. And it was really important how we handled it. I remember when I was 16, my dad opened me my first credit card. And he said, hey, here's how these function. Here's how it works. He would make me pay my credit card bill off every month. He would sit down and be like, look, this, here's your rolling account. Here's what you spend it on. This is an imaginary money. You've got to pay this off. And so like, it was just kind of like a part of parenting in our house.
Mm-hmm. I'd say like, I probably had a similar experience. So like, we're coming from like a massive place of privilege, and that we had parents that were very active in teaching us about money. And that's not necessarily the case for most people. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more from you, Drew, on just like the series in general and your message. But fun fact for the day, do you guys know why Wall Street is called Wall Street based on the graphic that was behind you while you're doing your message?
No idea.
Get this. So I looked this up because I'm that way. There was a Dutch colony, so New Amsterdam in that area. It was still under the Dutch colony in the 17th century, and so they had erected a wall to basically to protect themselves from the British potential British attacks. And the road that ran parallel to that barricade was called
Wall Street.
No, De Waal Strict.
Wow.
Or Wall Street.
Yeah.
And that's why we have Wall Street now. But anyway, that was a little tidbit for the day if you have a pub quiz to attend our trivia night. But yeah, tell us about the series and the message.
Yeah, we're just talking practically about money. How do we steward it well? We come from the standpoint that, you know, everything that we have is God's. And so how we, you know, handle it, how we steward it matters to God. And so we're just talking practically about how do we do that well over the next 4 weeks? What are steps that we can take practically? What are emotions that we should avoid? All these things just revolving around this big stressor called money.
And I love that as a church that we've basically offered Financial Peace University to everybody at Northridge for free. So Northridge just paid, this was like a $130 value, and we were able to get an amazing deal on it. So
per person, that is.
Per person.
Yeah.
Yeah, per person.
We shelled out $130.
And so really encourage everybody, get into a group, find a way to get Financial Peace University.
Yeah.
Super practical, biblical-based tools. Get in there and get the Every Dollar app. It's really fantastic material. So
there's obviously a number of statistics out there of people that are struggling with money. I mean, even just like the US in general, like the West is like in trillions of dollars of debt. It's like, it's not simply just a individual level, it's a corporate level. It's a problem.
Yeah.
How would you guys categorize the problem that we have with money?
That's a big question.
Well, I think there is a cultural problem, and it comes back to how we view ourselves and our purpose in the world. In some ways, are we consumers? Like, if life is about me and experiencing the maximum amount of pleasure and the minimum amount of pain, then it's easy for it to become a matter of consumption. I want.
And do you think that Freud's emphasis on pleasure, was that him were dissecting that is what happens? Because I'm curious, like, is it more just like since Freud in the early 1900s, like that caused us to be more aware of our pleasure and we wanted more pleasure? Or do you think that's been just a thing that's been around for a really long time?
I think there's both. I do think it's really both. And in some ways, because of the Industrial Revolution and the affluence that allowed us to create, we can experience more pleasure than we ever have as human beings in the past. Because we have to do a lot less manual labor. Death is a lot farther away than it ever used to be. So we've distanced ourselves from a lot of pain. And we can experience more pleasures than we ever have been able to before. And that ultimately turns in on itself. The more that we serve pleasure or serve ourselves, when those things start to become your master, now I'm a slave. I'm a slave to money because I'm in debt, or I'm a slave to pleasure because I just want more of it. It's one of those things that never says enough. Just like money, if I make that my God, I will never have enough. It consumes you rather than giving you life. And only God can give true life when we worship him. You become like what you worship.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the core of it, it's flesh versus spirit, right? It's our sinful nature, right? And that leads to what? I want pleasure. I'm selfish. And when you live in that mentality, like, you don't really think, when you're consumed with pleasure or you're consumed with selfishness, you don't really think about how this decision is going to affect me later. All I care about is how it's going to impact me now, please me now. And I think that's like one of America's biggest problems is that those choices in the right now, we forget the pain and the destruction that our flesh leads to down the road.
Could you just double click a little bit on what it is for money to be a God, or for money to be God?
I mean, it's when you worship it, right? When you've taken it out of, like, when you've taken what God says about money and you replace it with what, you know, what the desire you long for more than what, how God says to manage and steward it. I think, you know, that happens a lot. This is just not a money conversation, right? But like the topic is money. And I think God even, or in his word, he says you can't serve two masters, mm-hmm. right? You can't love money, right? The root of the love of money is, right? Like you can't serve God and money at the same time, mm-hmm. right?
And I think in some ways it's, where do I find my security? Is God my fortress, or is the like nest egg that I'm building for retirement, is that my fortress?
Yep.
Is God my fortress, or is it the paycheck that I'm going to get so I can keep the lights on and keep the house warm and put food on the table, or experiencing that next hit of being able to buy something and open the box when it comes tomorrow?
Yeah.
So there's tension there, because even in, as we're talking about financial peace, we're talking about the pragmatic or practical side of saving retirement, being wise stewards of our money. So there's a tension there, but there's a slight nuance between like, what is our motivation behind it? Is it our motivation just to preserve and protect ourselves? Or are we there to serve God's kingdom? And there is a little bit of a tension there, but I'm curious, what do you guys see as some of the like motivated, because we're all motivated by something, right? And mm-hmm. our decisions to either spend, save, invest, whatever, our money, how do we deal with some of those motivations?
I think a big motivator is comparison, right? Again, we live in a social media culture. So like I can go online and see, oh, this person is on this trip, this person drives this car, lives in this home. And I also see how happy they are, at least from a surface level, with those things. And so I want what they have, right? I want to experience what they experience. And so I think, you know, this journey of, man, I want to have the same status as the person who drives the BMW or the Mercedes. I think there's a lot of pressure on people to keep up with the Joneses or chase the American dream and feel less than if you don't have this bar of at least these assets or this, you know, symbol on your car or whatever. Right. And I think that is a big motivator for people of, hey, I want to look the part.
It's amazing how like, so the term Keeping Up with the Joneses came from a comic that was called Keeping Up with the Joneses in 1913. Like over 100 years. And for some, I mean, it's been part of our colloquialisms in our culture, but somehow we still can't get to the root of it. Or we know that it's there, and probably we're all aware of how we're maybe we aren't, but like, are we trying to keep up with the Joneses or not? But it's amazing that it's been around so long and we still haven't been able to figure it out.
Well, we don't really feel like we're living that way, but we do tend to live like the people that we surround ourselves with. So we surround ourselves with people who are always talking about the shows they're watching on Netflix. Well, you're going to feel a lot of pressure to subscribe to Netflix so you can be part of all those conversations.
It's true.
Do you need Netflix? No, you don't. You don't need it.
I don't have it, so.
But so it's that kind of thing that when these things that become, that are like wants, that are the extras, all of a sudden become that I must have these things in order to survive socially. And with that, and it comes back to what Drew talked about in your sermon about fear. Like ultimately it's a fear thing that if I'm going to be judged or I'm not going to fit in, there's an element of fear that when we give in to fear, we're not living in the life that God has designed for us. We're not becoming people of love and life.
When it comes to our money, what does that look like between living in fear and living in faith? Like how would you categorize or characterize the two? Because someone might be listening and be like, I don't think I'm living out of fear. And some people are like, yeah, I'm living in faith, but actually it's fear behind it. How would you like kind of help someone diagnose that?
Yeah, I think it's hard because fear can lead to a lot of different circumstances, right? Like in the text, fear led the guy to bury the money, right? Mm-hmm. And like just I guess, protect it at all costs so he didn't lose it. But I think fear can sometimes, like the fear of missing out, can lead you to the opposite.
FOMO.
Of spending it all, yep. Right? Yeah. Blowing it all and then being like, oh my word, what have I done? To me, like the way I measure it in my own life of like, if I'm living in faith is who ultimately am I depending on, right? Mm-hmm. Am I able to say no to myself, right? And say, I don't need that, so I don't have to have it. I think that's living in faith, right? I think being able to give back to God and his church and other ministries is an example of God, I'm going to give this away knowing that you'll provide for me, right? And I think there's all different kinds of ways that you can, but here, I think the scary part is we're really good at disguising fear as faith too.
How so?
I think... That's a great question. I think there's a lot of ways, right? I think I can, this is how I do it in my life, right? So I will look like I live in faith. So I'll set aside a lot of money. I'll live as a miser, right? Almost like just so tightly to things. And it will look like faith because I have this nest egg, but my fear of being secure is lived out in my savings. So now I have a nest egg and I'm like, oh, I'm fine. And my security is in myself and my own fear. And if you were to take that away, it wouldn't be faith. It wouldn't be like, oh, God will provide. I'm like, oh no, I got to build that back up. Mm-hmm. But it can easily be disguised as good money management and faith versus behind the scenes. It's really a fear-based thing.
Yeah, it's easy for us to take a, you know, Christian buzzword like stewardship and turn it into just miserliness.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about. And I think for me, it's helpful for me to think through like when I look at my finances, when I think about money, am I able to approach it with a perspective of peace? Is there peace in my soul? Do I feel content? Do I feel confident that God will provide? Or do I feel anxious when I look at my money? And so I think part of this series is just helping people realize you can get to a point where you feel peace when you look at your finances. Yep. You can experience financial freedom, not because all of a sudden you have a lot of money, but because there is... We do have the ability to depend on God, whether we have a little or a lot.
I think that's the biggest distinction too, is I think when it comes to money, I think people are convinced that these rich people have peace and they don't. That's the thing, is it's not dependent on the amount you have or what you've been given. Peace ultimately comes from this, I'm stewarding it the way God has told me to, right? And when I live in obedience to God, guess what he gives me? Peace.
Yeah. I remember seeing some statistic, I mean, this has been around for a while, so the numbers might have changed, but there was something to do with like people, there's this like scale where people that make in a combined household income between $70,000 and $100,000 are, that's like peak contentment or happiness or something. I can't remember the word. After that, it drops. And before that, it's low. Like, so you have this bracket. So you would think it's not millions. Like it's, I know that for some people, they're like, that's an inordinate amount of money.
Feels like millions.
It's a lot. Yeah. But in sometimes in the grand scheme of things, that's actually not that much money compared to when the people that we look at who are multimillionaires and like they've got it going. You were going to say something.
I was thinking as you were talking about when that verse we often like to take out of context where Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He's talking about the context there is contentment.
Yep.
That whether he has a little bit or he has a lot, he's learned how to be content.
Yeah.
And that is what we're longing for with this series for people is, can we learn how to be content? Can we build some financial literacy so we know how to do these things well? And that will help us achieve contentment, but not just because we know how to do things well, but because we trust a God who is trustworthy.
There's a bit of a spectrum, I think, with people. You've got like the frugal and the frivolous. Like, almost within any married couple, at least you kind of have the spender and then you have the saver. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of plays out so often. As you said, you could be the saver, the frugal one, and have a hard time saying no. And the spender can have a hard time saying no or having some self-control. Mm-hmm. And the two look very different. Why is it so hard to have that self-control? Because we're talking about budgets. We're talking about, like, I mean, you say in your message, like, the number one thing is, like, create a budget and keep to it. Why is that so hard?
Because we're selfish. I think at the core of it, it's because we are selfish. I think this is why Jesus said, if anybody wants to be my disciple, he must pick up his cross, deny themselves, because it's such a spiritual battle to say no to yourself. Like, it's not a physical thing. It is a spiritual battle. It's like this, the Bible talks about this war between your flesh and your spirit. Your spirit is screaming, you don't need that. God will satisfy you. And your flesh is saying, nope, it won't. I need that. And like, I think we dumb it down to like, oh, it's simple. Why can't you just say no? But like, there is this war waging inside of your heart for your attention, for your worship. And the devil is so good at lying and convincing you that you need it. It's good for you. And it is a spiritual battle that's going on.
There's probably people that hear that and that are just like completely underwater. And they're like, great, you're just kind of telling me that I've lost that battle. I don't, if you're hearing that and you're like, great, I hope that's not you, that you feel that way. I'd love for you to talk to that person in a spiritual sense and in a practical sense. Like, how can they breathe again? What would be some like spiritual side and the practical side advice?
I think the spiritual side, like, we know because of Jesus, hope is always around the corner, right? Always around the corner. It doesn't matter where you are, how, I mean, I think if you think about the truth of the gospel, we were all dead in our sin, right? Hopeless. And so we know the truth is with Jesus, hope is always around the corner. And so one, live in that hope, right? Let God, I think the first thing, the first prayer I might pray is, God, help me to feel that hope, right? And let that hope move me to action, right? I think there's a beautiful balance in the scriptures of hearing the word and obeying the word. And so if you are underwater, take one step to move you above the water a little bit, right? What's what I love about Financial Peace University is like the first, I think, five things are called baby steps. And so they're not telling you to like, oh, just overhaul everything and fix it. I even said in my message, right? Like with budgeting, right? The 10-80-10 plan might feel crazy to you. Okay, start with 0.5%. Right? Start with just one small step and keep taking those small steps. And you can't do it by yourself, right? Have accountability,
that's right.
Step in prayer. Like, this is a spiritual battle. Go to the one who's going to win it for you.
Any thoughts on that?
I'm just soaking that in. I love that. But yeah, I think Jesus, it's such a spiritual, like, churchy answer, but finding our, the more that we are connected to the one who owns it all, the less that we feel the need to control our finances. And so I think some of those really basic Christian disciplines, like read the Psalms, like get connected to Jesus, and learn contentment. I think part of what has helped me when it comes to learning contentment with finances is actually practicing Sabbath. So take a whole day of the week and set it aside to not be productive, to stop, to rest, to worship, to delight in God and what he's given us. It's a rebellion against our culture that says you have to produce more. You need more. Work more. And God says, no, you don't need to do that. You can rest in me. Take a whole day and dedicate it to me. So Sabbath has helped me. Fasting, not learning to deny yourself when it comes to food, is really great practice for denying yourself when it comes to money.
Yep.
I would love for you guys, you know, it could be similar, it could be different, of paint a picture for our listeners of if Christians were to get this right, if we were to steward our money the way God wants us to steward it, paint the picture of what that could look like. Take that as narrow or as broadly as you'd like. What could it look like?
Oh man, I think the impact would be huge, like far reaching. I think, so like my mind immediately goes to like, we would walk around differently. Hmm. Our attitudes towards things would be different. I think a lot of the needy in our city wouldn't be needy anymore. I think if we got control of our money and we found contentment, our desire would be more to help the hurting and the hopeless in our community. You know, so I think you'd see a lot of that changing. I think the demeanor, the hope our city would feel and the generosity that would be lived out towards all different types of things. I just think it would be like a dramatically different place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's a key part of, you know, scripture uses the word shalom, like a sense of peace where everything is in its place, and how we understand our things is such a key aspect to everything being in its place, to justice happening in our world, to things being right the way they should be in the kingdom of God. And so, you know, we pray that his kingdom would come and his will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that's money is part of that, that we would handle the things that we have in a way that honors him, that brings a sense of peace and justice and shalom to our world, that makes things around us more beautiful, more worshipful, more like God than more like hell.
And I think it would show people a stark difference between us and the world, right? Unfortunately, we as Christians, the way we manage money is way more like our culture than it is countercultural. And I think people far from God look at that and they're like, man, they're just like me. They say they found something that satisfies, but if I look at the way they spend their money, I don't really think they have.
Yeah.
Because they seem to just keep spending money for something that will bring satisfaction.
As we round off this episode, there's probably people listening that are like, but what about this? But you don't understand this situation in my life. There's multiple things, multiple factors. It's not just like a kind of one or two prong thing that gives us financial problems. There's literacy, as we've talked about. There's the spiritual, the heart side of it. There's the circumstances where it's like, we've had the opportunity and the circumstance with our families to learn some financial literacy. We could see an unforeseen bill or inflation's gone up. You guys aren't talking about that. Or there's like, I don't know how to communicate about money. I don't know all the banking language. What does a 401k mean? What is an IRA? Like all these different banking terms. Or there's the personal side of things. It's like, I think we can just be lazy, or we don't have as good of a work ethic as someone else. There's all these different factors to where money can be a struggle for so many people. Mm-hmm. Can I just encourage you to join us in this pursuit of trying to get this stewardship thing down? If you're in a group, I hope you're doing financial peace. If not, join a group. There's another financial peace happening after. Take advantage of Ramsey Plus. Like as they've painted a picture for us of what this could look like, I really hope for you, for us as well, that regardless of all the excuses that we can make in a 30-minute conversation of it's not this and I need more, or if I didn't have this thing going on, let's press into God who provides it all in the first place. Let's start there. Let's start in a place of humility and trying to get our heart right, that we're able to have more self-control, that our motivation is not just trying to make it all about us, but it's on his kingdom. And do the simple practical steps, the baby steps, as you said, Drew. and let's see what God can do. Like, I'm so curious what God is going to do in our church and what could happen as a result of this series. So hopefully you can journey along with us in the process, and we'll see you next week as we continue on the series Money Matters. See ya.